This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 405, coming to you live from the 405 in LA. No, not really. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me via Skype from Melbourne, from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Hey, I got an email this week, Bruce.
Yeah?
From a couple of concerned listeners.
Okay.
Couldn't find last week's episode anywhere. Kick out 404 not found, apparently.
I cannot.
That's a joke I made up myself.
I'm so disappointed in myself for missing that last week.
You should be for a nerd like yourself, you should be absolutely. But here's the thing, that when you made that joke offline before, yeah, and I actually picked it up, which is something bordering on Mensa qualifications for myself.
Exactly.
I used to be quite so quick. So have you been? Did we record last week?
Yes, we did. You were secret squirreling.
Right. Yeah, still squirrel. Stories to tell. Oh, the stories I could tell.
If only you could tell them.
I could tell them. If I went to Adelaide last week, remember we did a podcast and I went to Adelaide the next day, and that was lovely. A lovely day. It's been just the day, which is probably long enough. Lovely, lovely day in Adelaide, and popped over there for Diamond's Camera and Video,
right?
And it led a photo walk through the heart of Adelaide.
Yep.
In the middle of lunch hour rush, trying to do a street portrait photography walk.
That's right. I did see you post one photo of a guy who was clearly out of the workforce.
The only guy I'm walking around trying to tell people, so look, we're here, we're walking the streets, and if you had to find someone to photograph, who would you find?
Yeah.
There's no one here. You pick up on people's vibes and energy, you know? We're not doing street photography. We're not just taking photos of people walking down the street.
No.
We're doing street portraits, which is, engaging with someone and photographing that one person.
Yep.
And 40 everyone's times. Just like, it's lunchtime, for goodness sake. People have half an hour or an hour. They're running everywhere.
Yeah.
And then I saw this old guy and his missus coming out of a shop, and I've gone, hello, retirees.
they've got time to burn.
A retiree with a bit of cool hair. Yeah, he had a bit of hair flowing in the wind, and he had his sunnies on, and his name was Jeff. He was quite the character, but we managed to get the pose for literally, I'm going to say, 3 minutes most.
Right.
For 17 of us. And the thing is, where I got him to set up, there was only one angle you could shoot where the photo was any good.
Right.
Literally one tiny little wedge. Right. And it required a lens of at least an 80-plus focal length.
Right.
To shoot. Yeah. So anyone with a 24 to 70 on was in struggling anyway.
Right.
And so it was one focal, one minimum focal range. From one very specific angle, 16 people in under 3 minutes. Needless to say, I'm not sure everyone got the shot. They understood what we're trying to achieve. And the rest of the walk basically was me just pointing out stuff.
Right.
Saying, if I had someone to shoot, that's where I'd shoot them.
Yeah.
If I had someone to shoot, that's how I'd work that light. If I had someone to shoot, that's why I'd use that particular lens, so which was all I personally
in a situation like that, why would you not call for a volunteer out of the group? I mean, you've got 17 people with you. You don't have to use the same volunteer every time. You would cycle through the group and go, hey, okay, this time I want to use you, and you're going to stand over there, and then the rest of the group will shoot you. And then the next place that you find that works, you go, okay, different volunteer from the group.
So what you're saying, I should have photographed one of the people that were with us.
Yeah.
There's an idea.
They had time on their hands.
There's only one problem.
What's that?
They were all Adelaideans, so they weren't very attractive. Yeah. And not even unattractive in a good way, you know?
Right.
No. I do talks at camera clubs and conferences and stuff, and and I'll say, put your hands up, those people like having their photo taken. So I demonstrated light on a couple of people.
Right.
And demonstrated, but we didn't actually photograph them.
Right.
And the other advantage to that, and this is my thinking, as much as the thinking was actually going on, was that if we tried to get all 17 people to photograph this person in the hour and 20-odd minutes that we had, we'd get nothing learnt.
Right.
So my focus is more about let's learn some stuff
right.
rather than take some photos.
Okay.
If we happen by chance to take a photograph, bonus, and we kind of got one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I figured, you know, what do you want to do? Take a pretty picture and go home and have no idea what to do next? Or let's go and walk around as if you're out shooting and learn some stuff.
Yep.
So I'd like to think that me talking nonstop for an hour and 20, which is like, yeah, same as the other 22 hours, 40 minutes of my day. talking nonstop for an hour and 20, giving them all sorts of tips and advice was at least usable to some people.
Right.
Yeah, that was kind of, I figured we could probably get more out of it by doing that.
Cool.
So it was a lovely day in Adelaide, and I hung around the sales counter for most of the day.
Yeah,
and with the men from Tamron, and just stood there and smiled and pretended to sell stuff.
Tried not to scare off the customers.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was fun. My back hurt though. Standing up in one spot on a hard floor for hours upon hours, you remember what it feels like to stand up for a long period of time rather than having naps. That was quite tender. Because, I had a busy week. I mean, it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in the Gold Coast. Thursday at home, madly panicking, doing editing and stuff. Friday in Adelaide. So I was pretty tired.
Yeah.
And my energy levels were somewhat diminished.
Yeah, a week with no mid-morning naps.
Gee, mate.
How on earth did you cope?
It wasn't easy. And then that was Friday. And then I've been doing some other stuff. I had to go photograph some other things for this project.
Right.
And I photographed some pretty decent stuff, I thought.
Oh, nice. Better weather?
No. Well, it was a different, completely different stuff I was doing than the other stuff I was doing.
Right.
It was more, let's say, closer up. Anyway, so I did all this stuff, and I sent it to there's a good bit of a giveaway there to the people.
Yep.
And they've gone, we kind of like your idea.
Right.
We kind of like your general execution, except for one major flaw, and that's that bit thing there. That thing shouldn't be there. Do it all again without that thing there.
So right.
And the things I shot had this beautiful light on it.
Right.
We've been fogged in for the last 2 days.
Yeah.
So, of course, haven't been able to reshoot the stuff because, well, we have beautiful lights and lovely clouds and nice warm, sort of winter sunlight.
Right. Fog. And you haven't had that since. Right.
And so we've had fog so thick that you literally couldn't see the end of your driveway.
Right.
So very thick fog the last 2 days. So that's been limiting the bright and airy and interesting, nicely lit photograph opportunities somewhat, So I'm on the downward spiral of this project now. They've looked at a whole bunch of the images I've shot over the last 2 weeks, and they've chosen 17.
Right.
And they wanted between 15 and 20, so I kind of, I guess I sort of made it, But I realised I haven't shown them a whole bunch of images. They've only chosen them from the few sample ones I've been showing them. What I was planning on doing was at the end of the thing, well, once I'd finished shooting, load them all up and say, okay, here's 200 images, choose from that. But they've been choosing from the few I've been sending each day. So
right.
I'm just hoping there's not something far better in the stuff I haven't sent them.
Well, I guess if you send stuff at the end of the project and they go, oh, well, this trumps some of the earlier stuff he sent, then they'll cycle them out.
Possibly indeed. And then the other thing I've got to do is finish off this closer in stuff.
Yep.
And that's a matter of an hour off. And now I've got to edit all the damn things.
Right.
And when I say I...
You mean Dave Oakley.
I mean Dave Oakley. So I'm frantically uploading all the RAW files. I actually had to even shoot RAW, which is crazy bad. Uploading all the RAW files at the moment. And school holiday starts after tomorrow. So it's like, Dave, you're going to have to do all the work because I'm not even sure I'm even going to be able to be around. So I'm going to do that my day.
Glenn.
Yeah, mate. Yeah.
Have you backed up those images?
In fact, just before being on the phone, I've been frantically looking, because I've got them in all sorts of different spots, of course.
Right.
There's some on one hard drive. There's some on another hard drive. I think a bunch are still on memory cards. So I've been frantically looking ahead, John. And here's the other stupid thing, of course. I renamed all the files.
Oh, no.
So from the original file, I renamed them to, you know, Gold Coast Day One, Shop Blah, Shop Two, yeah, blah, 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 blah. But of course, now I've got to go out of a whole bunch of similar images, go and find the ones that actually match up to the changed file name. Because the original, the raw file stayed the same name. And that's what I need to find. you know, when they say system, I say what?
But are you using Lightroom?
No, I don't use Lightroom.
Oh, what do you use?
I look at the folder and pluck one out. Right. I look at the tiny thumbnail images.
Right.
And out of the 20 that look similar, figure, hey, that one's probably the best.
No, but you shot in RAW, but presumably, did you send RAW files to the client?
No, I opened them. No, I opened them and then I saved them as, you know, low-res JPEGs to send.
In what program?
Photoshop.
Right. Does Photoshop not embed into the EXIF metadata the original file name? Because I'm pretty sure Lightroom does.
How the hell would I know? what do you think I am, competent or something?
Okay.
How long have we known each other?
A while
Come
now.
On, a while. Question. And you still ask this stuff.
I live in hope.
You still assume there's some form of competence, some form of logic and system.
Yeah.
Some form of idea of what I'm doing.
That's right.
It's possible. I don't know. If somebody knows, it's probably too late by the time this goes out, but if somebody knows.
Leave it to Dave. He'll find it. He'll find it.
There is an XMP file thingy.
Ah, well, don't lose those. Don't lose those.
Oh, it doesn't matter because we're going to re-edit them anyway.
Yeah, yeah, but the XMP might actually have the original file name embedded in it.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of thinking, maybe. But too late. By the time I find the XMP file, I found the file.
Right, okay.
Breaks the point of it. So I've got to resave everything as JPEG files, see? So, not JPEG, so it's TIFF files.
Oh, okay.
TIFF. So Dave opened. I'm going to send all these RAWs to Dave.
Yep.
Send the sample JPEGs to Dave. So Dave,
yep.
Dave, can you make this RAW look like my JPEG. Really bad Photoshop JPEG, but much better?
Yep.
Save it as a TIFF and upload it with your much faster internet than mine. Right. He's going to go, sure, I've got nothing better to do than 17 files like that, plus whatever else you shoot next week for me to do. I'll say, good on you, Dave.
Oh dear!
So then one last thing's happened to me this week. I met a gallery owner today. Guy called Michael Silver in a place called Magnet Gallery in down here in sunny Melbourne. By sunny, I mean foggy.
Yep.
And yeah, fabulous gallery called Magnet. They're an amazing old building, which I just, you know, I'm very jealous of.
Right.
I'm going to just try and find up their website whilst we speak. But they're trying to build a community of photographers around this gallery. He's got this inspiration from these galleries around. There's apparently some photo gallery in England. It's just going off. It's more you know, almost museum/gallery in England, and another one in Germany. He's got this inspiration from that. He wants to kind of, you know, build a reputation for photography as a destination to go see, not just art.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
And the name Magnet, and so I'm trying to draw people together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It's magnet.org.au.
That's the one. Yeah, so it's even a .org, so it's actually like an organisation, not just a .com. But lovely guy. He's been a photographer since 1967.
Right.
He's done huge amounts of stuff. Yeah. But one of the things that amazed me, and if I can see if I can find it out, is they've got this massive archived gallery of early Aboriginal photos or photos of Aboriginals from around the 1900s.
Right.
In a place called Lake Tyres in Victoria, little Lake Tyres Mission. So it's got over 20,000 images. From the 50s and 60s, I should say. They're not quite that old.
Right.
But still quite old, but not that old. Mm-hmm. But over 20,000 images of Indigenous life. That's quite an astounding collection.
Right.
I can't think of another massive collection like that. And then they've got all this huge collection of glass plate negatives, stereo slides, a whole series of slides from Gallipoli, which is really huge. And he's done a project going around country of Victoria, archiving people's World War One photographs.
Wow.
From soldiers going in, into communities and finding their grandfathers and great-grandfathers'
images. I was just going to say, was he doing a door knock through the state?
Seriously. Well, it's not such a silly thing. I've heard of this. This used to happen back in the, maybe in the 2000s or the 1990s, something like that.
Yeah, right.
People would go door knocking these country estates and country farms and stuff, asking if they've got any old cameras.
Right.
And buying old cameras. Because what happened is a lot of the guys from World War II sort of era, they'd buy Leicas, they'd buy all sorts of stuff that whilst over in Europe, and whilst they're over there, and then bring them back.
Yep.
And they'd be sitting on the shelf for 30, 40, 50 years.
And still with a roll of film in it.
Pretty much. And so these guys would go around and offer them, $50 for, it's a nice old camera. It's old, so it's not very good. I'll give you $50 for it kind of thing.
Yep.
And picking up all these really rare, hard to find German cameras.
Wow.
But that was obviously enough of them out there that these guys actually had made a living out of going around and doing it. So this guy, he went door knocking, maybe collecting all this amazing stuff. So I'm not sure. We're gonna look at doing some sort of collaboration in the future. Not sure exactly what.
Yeah, right.
We're gonna do something together and try and help build, as they call it, a new social enterprise and living center of photography in Melbourne. So they've got two galleries in Melbourne. This one's this beautiful old building and lovely old staircase and some beautiful lights. I might even run a few workshops from there. We'll see.
Nice.
One of those places you go into and there's a great community. There's a great drive to do something new.
Yep.
That's not just the normal everyday camera club type of stuff or whatever. So one of the things they're doing, they're working with some artificial intelligence group from RMIT,
right,
doing a thing there on artificial intelligence, which has nothing to do with photography, but there's links into technology and who knows where, and they want to start up a science photo award,
mm-hmm,
which is interesting. So because it's in scientific photography,
yep,
there's not a lot of that sort of really technical stuff being done. So they've got lots of big plans. So if you are a Melbourne photographer, Magnet Gallery, worth popping in and have a little look around. Doesn't cost anything to go and have a look around in. It's at 640 Bourke Street in Melbourne, for those who want to know, second floor. And
awesome.
That's been my week.
Yeah, cool.
What's your week been? What have you been doing this week?
Well, excitement? It was about 4 o'clock.
You're still about to make some more.
About 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
Last Friday. The day after we recorded.
Yeah. I get a text, a Facebook message from a photographer that I know in Sydney who says to me, "You interested in shooting some sport tomorrow?" And I said, what kind of stuff and where? And is this a paid gig or a love job or what's the story? And he said, it's a paid gig. He said, it'll be soccer and it'll be on the Central Coast. And I'm getting all the details for you now. And so it turned out that it was doing headshots and group shots for 21 soccer teams in 6 hours.
Oh.
Oh, man.
So a love job turns into a hate job pretty quickly. Did you say yes?
I did say yes.
Oh, God.
So I went off and do that. And
so how many people in a team? Like 12?
Well, it's meant to be 11, but some of the, particularly the junior teams, like the under sixes and under sevens, there was one team that only had 3 kids in it. stuff like that. But then there were some of the more senior teams, like the under, I think it was about the under 16 or under 17s, where one of them, they had about 14 or 16 people in the shot. So it sort of varied, but I'd say on average, it was maybe 8, 9, 10 per team. So that was just a madhouse of activity. And I turned up barely knowing nothing about what I was doing. I assumed I was shooting photos and that was it. And the photographer that runs the business is a woman who has recently separated from her husband, and that's caused a lot of stress in her life, as you can imagine. Particularly when it was a husband and wife team running the photography business, and he's just walked out, and so she's trying to do it all by herself. And so she said, I'll meet you at the soccer ground at 7 o'clock. And I went, okay, no worries. So
is that AM?
AM. And it's an hour's drive from where I live. So I had to leave here by 6. So I was up at 5:30. So anyway, I get up there, meet her. And she goes, I'll bring the trailer over and I'll set the trailer up there and I'll put the blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, the what now? And she's got these fold-out stands and she's explaining to me, oh, you know, you'll need these stands for the group shots. You put the, you know, the back row standing up on the stands and you've got a table here and you've got to take the money and you've got to put all these forms in envelopes. I'm like, what? What am I doing? I thought I was here to take photos. She goes, this is what it's about. And I'm like, oh, crap. So it was a real trial by fire. And then just to add a little bit of complication to the whole proceedings, and she had said this to me on the Friday afternoon, she said, I'll meet you there at 7 o'clock, get you set up, but I've got to go and take my son to his hockey game and I'll be back at about 10:30. So for 3 hours, I'm completely on my own with no freaking idea of what I'm meant to be doing and trying to crank through these images. And to make matters worse, and I felt horribly embarrassed by this, as soon as I got to the ground, I got my camera bag out of the car and I unzipped it because I know what it's like with temperatures, you know, particularly like freezing cold. I thought, oh, I don't want the lens fogging up, so I'll get the camera out as soon as I get to the ground. So it's got, you know, half hour to climatize before we start shooting. I started shooting. Everything was fine. And seriously, like 10 minutes into it, it starts fogging. And it was the front element. And so I kept on, you know, trying to rub the front element clean and get the fog off it and then take the shot before it fogged up again. But there was a sequence of, I'm going to say 10 or 15 images where it just looked like I had the worst 1975 era soft focus filter on everything. It was just like, oh, my God. So when she came back, I had to explain to her. I said, look, I'm really sorry. I did everything I could, but there was just nothing I could do. And she did say to me, she said, look, don't stress about it. She said, the club knows what I'm going through, and if we've got to reshoot some of these, they'll understand. Yeah, so that was a real trial by fire for me.
When are you doing it again?
Well, here's the interesting thing. I uploaded all the photos. Well, she said to me, there's heaps of work available, right? But this was before she'd seen anything I'd shot. I uploaded all the photos on Saturday night to Google Drive, and I shared the folder with her, and I haven't heard from her all week.
Yeah,
and I tried to ring her today, and she didn't pick up. It just went to voicemail. So I don't know if she was disappointed with what I did and doesn't want to confront me, or if she's just busy with other things. I'm hoping she's just busy.
Did you see the other examples of the work they produced before you got there?
Yeah, she showed me a couple of samples. Yep.
And did yours look roughly on par or similar?
I think they did. I tried to be consistent, and I mean, you know, given that this was my very first time at it, and I was only given, you know, half of the instruction before she took her son off to hockey. Like, she came back and looked at some of the photos and she goes, oh, make sure you always have them with their hands behind their back. I was like, oh, you could have told me that.
Information that would have been handy earlier.
At 7 o'clock this morning, that would have been good information to have. So, you know, there were a few things where it didn't go exactly to plan, but I think I delivered. But, you know, I'll wait until I speak with her. So... anyway.
And if you don't, you'll know you didn't deliver.
That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, that could only blame her.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, I did the best that I could under the circumstances.
Yeah, under the brief that you – I mean, I said the stuff I've been doing with these people.
Yep.
Yeah, translation's an issue.
Right.
You know? So you're trying to figure out, well, what are they actually saying? And it's hard to know. And then some of the stuff they've done – caused problems that were unforeseen.
Right.
And therefore, but because they didn't do their job properly,
yeah,
that's caused me not to do my job properly.
Right.
And other aspects of the thing not correct. And that's part of the reason why I have to reshoot, so they haven't done their job properly. And that's, yeah, but yeah. that's, maybe I should have asked more questions. But when you have in your case, you had a time barrier, she's gone.
Yep.
In my case, I've got a language barrier, which isn't always a breach.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, you're only as good as the information given to you,
Exactly.
And so, I mean, if you got told every photo hands behind their backs, well, you know, why would you think to do that?
Yeah.
You know, she should have said, and what she should have done is said, and had some printed images and said, look, here's what the group shots need to look like. Here's what the headshots need to look like. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have made life a bit easier, wouldn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Still.
Anyway.
Well, good on you. Yeah. Sounds like it must have been. If you're working 6 hours, you must have clocked in at least $120.
That's right. So she did say to me that there's work pretty much every weekend. She's pretty much out shooting 7 days a week now that she's on her own, and she's got two kids that she's they're both sort of under 10. Actually, I think her daughter was 10 and her son was 8 or something. So it'd be quite a handful for her trying to juggle all of that, and at the same time she's got to her and her now estranged husband have to sell the family home, and she's then got to go and find the money to buy a new place. And I don't envy her in that situation. So
anyway. And get her own kids to sport events and all the other stuff.
So she's currently been using this mate of mine, Rod, who's a Sydney-based photographer, and another Sydney-based photographer, and having them travel all the way up from Sydney every weekend. So as long as I can get up to speed and deliver the quality that she's looking for, it certainly would be a lot more advantageous for her to have access to me, who is a lot closer geographically. Yeah. So, I mean, admittedly, she's an hour up the road from where I am, but that's still closer than Sydney. So,
yeah, hell of a lot closer than Sydney. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been the fun and games for my week. So, but
fabulous.
Yeah.
Haven't we been busy little bodies,
We have. We have. Oh.
I've taken photos. You've taken photos. I mean, there's not many of our 405 episodes that could be said.
No, that's true. And I do have to say a huge word of thanks to Rakesh.
Oh, you're welcome, mate. Oh, sorry?
To Rakesh.
What for?
He's busy beavering away on the website as we speak.
Is he?
Yes, because you know how you complained about there was no banner image?
Last week?
Yeah. You made comment about the fact that...
I complained about all sorts of things.
That would be so unlike you. But yes, you did.
You know, it's only negative and yeah, if it's not true.
That's...
It's only, some phrase somebody used for me the other day, I can't remember this, would have been perfect if I could have thought of it.
Right.
It'd be perfect to say, you know? Right.
Okay.
Yeah, but imagine I said something really witty just then, and it was fabulous. Oh, love it.
There it is, Homer. The cleverest thing you'll ever say, and nobody heard it.
Anyway.
That was my greatest ever joke I ever told.
That's right.
On the spur of the moment. It was to a person who didn't understand English properly, and there was no one else around.
No.
And it was straight over the head. Yeah, I know. You know, one of those moments when someone says something to you, and you come back with the perfect... hilarious response, and nada.
Right.
And you're looking around like, nobody.
Wasted. Wasted that gem.
So I'll tell you what it was. Listen, I have to. So I was checking into a hotel. The hotel, this is back in the days of the old manual credit card systems.
Right. With the chunk machine. Yeah.
And I walked up to the hotel and said, I want to check in. And the woman said, can I have an impression of your credit card? I said, I'm sorry, I don't do impressions. And it was just nothing. It was just nothing. It's so sad. Anyway.
Oh, dear.
I abuse myself. Yes. I've been living with that for 20 years, that joke.
Reliving that moment.
The problem is, when you hit the highlights of your life in comedic circles, it's going to be downhill from there, you know. That was the pinnacle, Bruce. It was my Everest.
Right.
Speaking of Everest, my daughter asked me this question this week, and what was the tallest mountain on Earth before they discovered Everest?
It was still Everest.
Yes! Yes.
Oh, dear. Should we move on to some stories?
You know, Everest wasn't even anybody special. It was like a nobody.
the mountain.
The bloke the mountain's named after was a nobody.
Oh.
Nobody special, didn't have any great career, didn't have any great military, didn't have any great royal. It's just some bloke who worked in an office, got a bit sick, took a bit of sick leave, went home. That's about it.
Is this some bad dad joke? Is that?
And his name's not even, it wasn't even pronounced, that's true. His name's not even pronounced Everest.
Right.
It was like Everest is how he pronounced his name.
Oh, okay.
So it's Mount Everest, if we were to say it properly.
But why'd they name it after him?
Well, that's the thing. They didn't name it as, this is the tallest mountain in the world, let's name it after him. They just said, well, here's a mountain, let's call him after my mate Dave. Not knowing it was the tallest, because they didn't know they were not going to find anything bigger.
Right.
It's quite hilarious, you know, circumstance. So something so important as the tallest man on the planet is named after insignificance, you know?
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. Not really, but there we go.
No, it's not. Exactly. But anyway.
But since we've got not much to talk about tonight, that was filled in a couple of seconds, hasn't it, Dave?
Yes, it has.
Yes. Never mind the clock, look for the weight.
I saw some interesting Sony gear porn today.
Yeah.
Sony has launched the $12,000 400 f2.8 lens. Wouldn't that...
Is that US dollars?
I would imagine so.
Otherwise, I was in, but yeah, please do that. Yeah.
400 f2.8. That would be a monster. So,
but it's sort of... Sony A9, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, so this lens was rumored back in...
So it's not E-mount, it's A-mount.
Yeah.
A-mount.
Yeah, so...
Why?
You could buy one for me, Glenn, as a Christmas present.
Why would they do an A-mount? Why would they do this? Why would they launch this? They don't even make A-mount cameras anymore.
Well, that's an interesting hypothesis, because it has been over 2 years since the... A99 Mark II came out. That was the last A-mount camera they released.
Yeah.
And
there's no lens that's been released since then, and then all of a sudden to bring out this behemoth.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's for, you know, some of those shooters that like buying Sony glass to put on other manufacturers' bodies, but I don't know. Maybe there's hope for A-mount yet. Maybe there's another A-mount camera coming.
It's very bizarre.
It is.
Watch
a bit
this
odd.
Space, I guess. It's very odd. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you can see, like, I mean, they're touting like the A7R3-962QP7.14 or whatever thing's called.
Okay.
As like the ideal sports camera, you know, with its like 15 or 20 frame a second shooting and its tracking, focusing system, all the stuff that's really good for sport. Then you get released the ideal sport lens, not
so
for it.
That particular body that you're referring to, was it the A7 III or the A7 R3?
Oh, I don't know. They're all confusing. There's just too many things.
If it's an A7 Mark III, that would be full. That would be A mount, wouldn't it? Oh no, it'd be full frame, but on it'd be E mount.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Their camera that they're designed specially for sports users, then being a lens that doesn't fit on it.
Yeah, right.
Like, hello, did somebody put the wrong mount on the back of that and forget what they were doing? Did get all the way to this? Oh, we're finally finished designing this lens. Oh, bugger.
Oh, hang on. Hang on. Stop. Hold the phones.
I'm not on the phone.
This lens is E-mount.
How can it be? It's sitting on A camera with a Sony A9, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but that's an E-mount body. And it says in the specs, image circle, 35mm, full frame E mount.
Well, that makes more sense.
Yes, it does.
I'll let you off, Mr. Sony.
So there we go.
You know, the only Sony department to continually make money is their life insurance.
What?
Sony Life Insurance is the only department of Sony that's ever has continually made money over its entire existence.
Really?
Every other department. Yeah, loses money left, right, and center.
Wow.
One of the things that keeps them going is their life insurance division.
Wow. I didn't even know they did life insurance. I'm assuming that's amazing. A Japanese-only product, I'm assuming.
Well, funny enough, my wife works in the superannuation finance insurance world.
Right.
And Sony almost bought their company. They bought like a 15% stake and were about to buy the rest of them, but then there was some tax issues in Japan they've got to deal with first, and so they pulled out of the deal.
Oh.
So there were going to be Sony in Australia in insurance. But
wow.
It's a that's a, one of those, another these weird and funny little stories that the guy who invented the Sony, who started Sony, who invented the transistor radio, went to America to try and get someone to buy it and to get it as popular there. And he had this little office, and across the road was this huge white glowing edifice of a building back in there. It's like the 60s we're talking about. And he was so amazed by this building. He said, who could possibly ever own one, a building like that? And it was Prudential Life Insurance.
Right.
And he said, so it's obviously money and insurance. So he went back and started Sony Life Insurance back in Japan.
Wow.
At the same time. Very, wow. Very interesting reason for starting a business. Oh, yeah. Could a building they can afford?
Yeah. Wow.
Anyway, this could be the useless crap episode of our podcast. Yes. Oh, sorry. We need to differentiate between the.
So moving on, a new SD card format is on the horizon. It is called SD Express. So you've probably already heard about UHS-2 and then UHS-3. Well, SD Express comes after UHS-3, and it will offer transfer speeds of, wait for it, 985 megabytes per second. That is almost a gigabyte a second in transfer speeds. Yeah, every second, continuous. And maximum capacity of 128 terabytes. That is crazy.
That's why they're called Express.
Yeah. Why?
They should call it Huge Express.
Okay.
it's astounding, isn't it? I mean,
that is a crazy amount of storage.
For such a tiny little device.
Yeah.
To hold that much. I mean, that's alien technology right there.
It's got to be.
I mean, this is no way. Have we gone from, massive cards with not much storage 15 years ago to 128 terabytes?
It does boggle the mind because I remember about, I'm going to say 9 or 10 years ago, reading a blog story somewhere about how the hard disk drive manufacturers were saying that they were nearing the physical limits of just how small you could make a transistor, and that would determine that there would be a finite limit to how much storage capacity you could put on a platter, or, inside a hard disk. So, clearly they've improved on the technology somehow. Yeah, crazy.
But they're also coming out with CF Express as well.
Right.
I'm just looking at a little link just down the bottom down there.
Yeah.
So some prototypes to replace CFast and XQD cards.
Okay.
With this thing as well. So.
Whoa, and they'll offer 1.4 gigabytes a second. Whew.
Man.
That'll speed up the time it takes to back up those photos you've been shooting, Secret Squirrel. Steve Peters sent us a story via the Facebook page and said, you've got to love another copyright breach story. This is a story of a Singapore-based photographer who, touts his 100,000-plus Instagram followers, and it turns out that all the photos, or a large proportion of the photos, let's not say all, of the photos on his Instagram feed, he stole them.
Somebody else's.
Yep.
Love it.
He even grabbed some from stock libraries. So, yeah. I just don't understand why anyone would still do this in this day and age. Like, you're never going to get away with it. You're going to get caught. But then again, maybe he's going on the philosophy that there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Well, possibly. And if he wasn't famous before, he might be now. You don't know if those 100,000 followers are even real anyway.
Well, exactly. It could all be bots.
Could have bought, yeah, exactly.
Fooled all the bots.
I just had an idea just then.
Yeah.
I'm going to start a new website.
Right.
Stealmyphotos.com.
Okay.
And? Well, no one's ever stolen one of my photos.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
I want to start a website. I want to put stuff up there. Hey, go ahead. Right. Go for it.
Yep.
If you see any value in, because personally I think it's some sort of honor. Some badge of honor there. Someone steals your photograph. It was obviously good enough to steal.
That's right.
Which says a fair bit about my work, I guess. but we should. I'm going to start a steal my photo.net. Maybe it can be like a Flickr type thing where people
if the people can submit their own photos to be stolen. And maybe there's a way of tracking how many times it's been stolen.
Yeah.
And you can be ranked by how many times your photo's been stolen. Makes you the best photographer in the group. I'm liking this.
Yep.
A whole different take on the whole world of, yeah, be proud.
Yeah.
Love it.
Excellent.
If I wasn't so lethargic, that could be something I would do.
That's right. Adam sent us a few stories. The first one is MagMod, which is the company, has a product called MagBox, which is a revolutionary new magnetic softbox. So,
it's 24-inch octa.
Wouldn't know that I'd go revolutionary, but it's a softbox.
The way it attaches to your flash is all by magnets.
Right.
So it's on and off incredibly quickly and really securely too. So it's not something that's going to, you twist on one, to twist on, then the thing falls off and all those kind of things.
Yep.
So, the MagMod stuff's actually really nice.
Okay.
I've quite a bit of it. I haven't used it much, but I do. It's all built incredibly well.
I was going to say the bracket that actually holds your speed light does look really nicely made.
Everything they make is they've thought it through and it actually works. Yeah, you know, it's actually obviously been tested and used.
Yep.
And works, which is not something you can say about always. So that can hold two flash guns, which I love. That bracket.
That's great.
It's just a really really quick bang, extra power. Oof.
Nice.
So very clever. And once again, your flashes just magnetize on.
Yep.
Little catch goes over the top. Bang! You've got two flashes on there if you need to in seconds flat. Your softbox is on in seconds flat, and away you go.
Nice.
Pretty cool setup. I'll have to hit up my friends at MagMod and see if they can send me your samples to.
Yeah.
They rang a couple of weeks ago. So I'm too busy to talk. Call later.
So they've got a Kickstarter going at the moment. Apparently, I assume this is still current. Campaign has already blown past its initial goal of $100,000. A contribution of at least $249, again, presumably US dollars, will get you one of each of the three new products if and when the campaign successfully delivers in early 2019. So they're aiming for January.
Yeah, I would imagine that even if it doesn't get funded on Kickstarter, it'll do pretty well. I mean, they had a $100,000 goal.
And they've already...
And 512,000 currently. So
yeah,
I think
right.
They might be okay.
I think they'll be. They should be able to get it over the finish line. Excellent. This next one that Adam sent, I really liked. It's called "These Wildlife Photos Aren't What They Seem," and it's a portfolio of images by a guy named Lucas Landers, and all of these images, they're black and white wildlife images, and they were all shot inside the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. And he talks about how he deliberately chose high ISO black and white. He used Ilford Delta 3200 or HP5 but pushed to 1600 to just give it a bit of a antique-y kind of feel and to hide any of the telltale signs that might have given away the fact that these were... recreated dioramas. And I thought, what an interesting concept for a portfolio of images.
Yeah.
I really liked it. And
course, yeah, well, I mean, they look good.
Yeah, they do. So I'll put the link not only to this story, but also to his actual website in the show notes for anyone that wants to check out, because there's a few images in the story on Petapixel, but his website will have more. And the last one that Adam sent was X-ray beams can recover lost 19th century photos. And these were all daguerreotype images, you know, that were a combination of bizarre chemical mixes that involved mercury. Yeah. And a lot of these plates have now lost the images, you know, that were originally etched on them.
Yeah, they've all faded or whatever, yeah.
But despite the, you know, the build-up of crud that's on top, the actual mercury layer is still on the plates, and this team managed to use X-rays and was able to get like pretty much perfect reproductions of the original images, even though to the naked eye they're completely gone.
Yeah, nothing there. Yeah.
So I thought that was very clever. So researchers at the University of Western Ontario in Canada. So yeah, really smart. And there's a little video. I haven't had a chance to watch the video yet, but Yeah, it's not a fast process, mind you. I think it said eight hours per image to scan and to get the information out of it. But, hey, if you can recover some historically important images.
Exactly. And there's not that many of them around. So, I mean, no. It's not like you've got hundreds of thousands of images to scan.
It's not like Google scanning all the books.
Exactly.
It's not that big a job.
Well, I listened to a song the other day.
Yeah.
And the song is music by a guy called Ben Folds.
Oh, yes.
And the lyrics is by a guy called Nick Hornsby.
Yes.
And Nick Hornsby's a writer.
Yes.
An author of books like About a Boy and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, High Fidelity, one of my favourite movies. Anyway,
right.
the words are basically Nick Hornsby just narrating the fact that 150 years ago or 200 years ago, how many books were made per year versus now how many books are made per day.
Right.
Many new books per day, yeah. And I said it's something like it would take 14 hours just to read the titles of the books that come out this year or something.
Wow. Yeah?
14 hours straight reading just to read the titles.
Just the titles. Wow.
There's so many books. There's a book come out every 30 seconds.
Jeez.
A new book every 30 seconds released in the world.
Presumably this is including self-published authors.
Well, I imagine so, but so you mentioned how Mr. Google's going to have a little trouble keeping up with that.
Yeah.
We'll scan every book. Well, if you can't scan a book in under 30 seconds, you're in some sort of trouble.
But I suppose all the new stuff is being released digitally anyway, so Google's not going to have to worry about that stuff. It's more the old
stuff. Logic, Bruce. Bruce.
Sorry, mate.
It's late at night. It's been a long week. And you start using logic, I might as well be talking to my wife.
Fantastic.
That's it. So if it wasn't for Adam, we wouldn't, and Steve, our lovely Steve Peters, we would hardly have a podcast this week.
Hardly.
We still managed to walk on for 50 minutes.
Yes. You shouldn't say that because you don't know how much I'm going to cut out.
Oh, yeah. Well,
might be 15 minutes at the
end. If I was you, I wouldn't be cutting any of this. This is all gold. Yeah, you just release it, clean up any bits and stray bits of noise, and release a whole. Give everyone the full experience.
Because they want that.
None of these expurgated versions.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, mate. Well, what's on for the rest of your week?
I've got to reshoot some images. And I had this one idea for this shoot. And I enlisted one of the world's best baby photographers.
Okay.
Yeah, these people do a phenomenal natural light, but not this over-the-top cutesy with hats and stuff, just all beautifully lit natural-looking shots.
Yep.
I enlisted her help to do a shoot the other day.
Is this the mum in Melbourne that you've told us about before?
Yeah. Yep. Kristen Cook, her name is, yeah.
Yep.
So we set up this thing, and we shot the whole thing, and I realized, I shot it all in JPEG by mistake. Yeah, it's probably jumping from camera to camera. You had this idea, and you're laying in bed, you go, oh, that's a brilliant idea. That's going to look awesome. And then you get to the reality, and you can't take a photograph because you're laughing so much for how stupid it looks.
Right.
So tomorrow we may try and reshoot it slightly less stupid looking.
Right.
Than we did the other day, but it may not be possible.
Right.
So... So I'm up for some creative thinking for the next day or so, you know.
Nice.
And that's it. It's a football on the weekend and then the school holidays. So, yeah, my mum's very unwell at the moment, so I've got to go visit her a few times this week with the kids and stuff. So she's been to hospital a few times and a bit delirious. So she has dementia. So she's been having hallucinations and all sorts of weird stuff going on the last week or so. So she's not been well. So
That's no good.
Take the kids up. And when you get the phone call, your dad's left me. Well, no, he died a year ago. And she's crying on the phone because they're split up. And it's like, oh, mum, you know. So it's a bit tough.
Yeah.
So we'll go visit her with the kids and try and brighten her day a little bit. And
cool.
So that's my week. School holidays, mucking around with the kids. Naps.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, myself and three mates...
Out trying to get soccer photos.
No, not this weekend. Myself and three mates are headed down to Canberra on Saturday morning.
By choice?
Yeah, by choice, believe it or not. I think the guy who decided that this was a great idea to go to Canberra for a weekend in the middle of winter, he's a Kiwi, so, you know, he's probably not affected by the weather.
No sense, though.
Yeah, so we're going down to watch a Brumbies rugby union match and just have a boys' weekend and then back Sundays. Yeah, not really my thing at all. So.
I saw a thing the other day in Canberra, it was minus six.
Yeah, it's meant to
you
be
better take your
meant to be minus winter. Three on Sunday, so yeah.
Yeah, take your winter woolies with you, dude.
I think so.
All right. Well, I would like to say again, it's been a lovely chat, and I look forward to the next time we chat.
Absolutely. See you, mate.
Tell you what, let's call next episode. Let's call it episode 406.
Let's do that.
Something rolled off the tongue. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, I come up with a good idea every now and then.
Sensational. All right, mate. Talk to you then. Bye.
See ya. Bye, everyone.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
Another AudioTeer.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.